Now on to the letters to the evening news. First of all, Jane Fleming of Overstrand complains about the disappearance of customer service as National Westminster Bank closes yet another branch. She says, after hearing the news that NatWest is now being taken back into their ownership after being bailed out by us, the following morning I received a letter from NatWest informing me that the last bank in Cromer will be closing down shortly. We're informed that the nearest branches are Great Yarmouth, Dereham or Norwich, all an hour's drive away in each direction. The whole of the North Norfolk coast is now looking like a banking graveyard. Their excuse is everybody uses internet banking. I don't. I use the branch regularly to pay in cheques, take cash out and service my account. The staff are now facing redundancy after giving Cromer people years of friendly professional service. The MPs of Norfolk should be lobbying hard for the government to put pressure on the banking community to stop these wholesale closures. All of them are making millions, or so the financial pages tell us. When I ran a small shop, there was a term called customer service. This is sadly missing today. What a shocking state the banking industry has put the people of this country into.
The problems of servicing rural communities are the subject of a letter from Phil Rimmer of Colkirk. He says, for some time now, many Norfolk villages, including my own, have enjoyed a more regular bus service. The regularity is a welcome change, but the companies that run the buses make use of a double-decker or large single-decker vehicles. Larger vehicles are too big for narrow country roads, and they often cause problems for oncoming traffic, particularly if they happen to be HGVs. Furthermore, the buses are at least half empty, so they cannot be economical to run. Larger vehicles are expensive to purchase, to operate, and they are heavy on fuel, so running costs will be significantly higher than if the companies made use of minibuses, which would be more suited to village services. Minibuses would reduce running costs and are better for the environment. So, why do the companies make use of larger buses? And for how long will it be before these services are declared uneconomical and be withdrawn? That may suit the operators, who much prefer to cherry-pick their routes. And it might explain the failure to use smaller vehicles.
A longish letter now from Professor Dave Evans of Wyndham on the topic of environmentalism. In an era where sustainability is often used as a buzzword, it's time we looked more critically at what that really means, especially when it comes to global supply chains. Much of what ends up in our shops, from food to electronics, has roots in distant places, often on lands managed or inhabited by indigenous communities. These communities are among the world's most effective environmental stewards, yet their rights are too often overlooked by corporations seeking quick profits. Whether it's deforestation in the Amazon or mining in the Arctic, the link between environmental harm and the marginalisation of indigenous peoples is undeniable. These practices not only violate human rights, but accelerate climate change, which also affects us here in Norfolk, from rising sea levels to unpredictable weather threatening local agriculture. Businesses must do better. That means tracing supply chains to the source, obtaining the free, prior and informed consent of Indigenous peoples, and investing in sustainable practices that protect both people and the planet. We in the UK can play a role too by holding companies accountable, supporting ethical sourcing and recognising that real sustainability begins with respect for those who have cared for the land long before us. We need a new law to achieve this, a Business, Human Rights and Environment Act.
The same topic is debated by Godfrey Sayers of Wiverton. He says, these thoughts were prompted by noticing how lush the greenery is at the moment, the trees hanging heavy with leaves. And it has been like this for several springs recently. Why? 50 years ago, the scientist James Lovelock realised that the Earth, at least its surface, is a single living organism, which, like so many fundamental ideas, seems quite obvious now. All the multicellular life, from the common cold to the blue whale, has its origins in a cellular mutation 500 million years ago. We are all branches on the same tree. Every living thing is like a cell in a much bigger organism. So, not surprisingly, we can see ourselves today as the cancerous cells in this otherwise great entity. We are certainly being a nuisance, but probably not much more than an insect bite in the grand scheme of things, certainly not terminal. That we think this way, I believe, is because of our homocentric view that everything revolves, evolves, or is connected in some way to us. From the geocentric belief that the sun, the moon, and the stars were in orbit around the Earth, to the current belief that our existence is a threat to the future of the planet, which of course we are not. A threat to ourselves, quite possibly, but not the whole planet. All the components of Gaia can heal themselves, and so can the world.